Hello, and welcome to Creativity and Chaos, a 1L2N podcast. My name's Mike, of course you know that. Today I'm joined by some other people. Anyway, what do you guys want to talk about today?
We're here to ramble.
That was supposed to be better than Liam's.
Oh, right. Okay, hold on. Let's just take two. Take three. Welcome to Creativity and Chaos, a 1L2N podcast. My name is Gracious Mike. And boy, am I beautiful. Do you guys agree?
No, no. I don't really agree because I can't really see your face in high HD.
You're my brother, UHD. So I just don't feel like it's a thing I can agree to or disagree to. I have to be neutral with this.
Well, the thing is here, legitimately. The boys in the family can call each other beautiful, just like the girls in the family can call each other beautiful.
Amy,
but then when
beautiful.
You cross that, I'm like, Amy Fugly. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
Amy's face was great.
I think my son is very handsome, though, because I'm his mom. Well, so, of
you're
course,
allowed to
I
say
think
that.
He's handsome.
I think you're all beautiful, so screw you.
The thing is, I know I'm beautiful. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm a lovely person, and I'm fun to be around, and I'm very entertaining, and I'm smart, and I've got a 2 billion IQ.
And two.
Joining us now on today's very special episode is Mike's wife, here to confirm or deny each and every one of those points.
She's not real. Everybody knows she's not real. I made her up.
She's been real for years.
Yeah. No, seriously. Welcome to welcome to the podcast. And today I am joined by the wise and motherly Missy.
It's so exhausting being this intelligent.
Oh,
that's where he gets it from, man.
Yeah, I learned everything from her. I'm joined by the wisely and intelligently Amy.
Okay.
I know. Okay, I'm get out of the way.
By the wisely and intelligently-er Tommy.
I wasn't expecting that. I will take it. I'm dumb as dirt, but man.
And I'm also joined by the wisely-erest and intelligent-erlest Liam.
Yeah.
So today's just going to kind of be a kind of crazy chaos episode where we ramble. We don't have anything planned. A couple of us aren't feeling too well. And, you know, so that's it.
Guys, hold on. I want to get this information accurate because it blew my mind this week and I can't remember the exact number. So give me one moment.
All right. At this point, we're going to make sure that the editor does not cut out this amount of time that's in here. We just want pure dead air to rain. Yeah.
Maybe some lowly rolling wind.
What's your favorite sound of silence? You know, because you can't just have silence in you watch a TV show, you watch a movie, you listen to an audiobook. They can't just have long periods of silence. They have to do something like crickets or wind. Is there any other sounds? Mine
asks the question immediately, cuts us all off to answer his own question. I love it.
Go on.
Classic Mike.
Well, I was trying to give you guys time to think, you know. All right, if you have one, go for it.
It's got
to
be rain, right?
Yeah.
It 100% has to be rain. That type of soundscape is fantastic. I mean, wind is fine, but wind is nothing when it doesn't have something to brush against. So a forest, a windy forest. Ooh, all them leaves rustling in the wind.
Rustling
yes,
waves.
Sir. I do love that.
Pure waves. Wind is also nice. Just hearing a fast breeze that's just pure wind, not even brushing anything. It's just wind. I like the sound of that. Also like no, you're wrong. Also like what's it called?
Mic in the works there.
Yeah.
Don't yeah that.
Like breathing, like soft breathing. That's like in fear.
Just been playing too much Lethal Company.
My favorite, like, or one of my, well, there's two favorites. One of my favorite ones is kind of what you said about wind, but it's that like howling whistle wind that's in the background.
Yeah, I love that one, man. It's
that
so
one
good.
Is such a classic like movie trope. It's great.
It's a good movie trope.
I like it like after like a sniper shot and you hear like the shot like slowly whistle away in the wind. Yeah.
My other favorite one really nice. At night is like barn owls in the background, just very quiet.
Mm.
Ooh, love.
Yeah.
Ooh, ooh. That's a barn owl.
Legitimately, when we were all camped together, me, you, Mike, or I should say me, Liam, Mike, and his wonderful wife. There were cicadas, and there were two cicadas that were perfectly dissonant. It was like, and the other one was, like just perfectly, perfectly dissonant. And they were playing at the same time every single time they would move around. And I could not sleep that entire night. That is my worst ambient noise. I hated that.
And it was hell on me.
I really like rainstorms with like thunder rumbling in the background. Mm-hmm. And I also like a good river or brook babbling, where it's just like water movement, but it's not ocean water movement where it's like the back and forth through the waves and the waves crashing. I don't like that. It's inconsistent. Whereas like a river is consistent. I like consistent noise.
Waterfall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, do you like too loud? When
But it doesn't have to be right up there. Like it could be, hey, I'm quite a distance away from that waterfall and I just hear that consistent rush noise, but it's soft.
How do you feel about traffic going by on like a wet road? Because honestly, I love that. That does not, that sets me in the mood.
Tires on loose gravel.
Yeah, that's my favorite sound of all time.
Tires that is on my favorite sound. Gravel. So.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yes.
That's perfect.
I don't understand why like ASMR streamers haven't gotten into that, and maybe there is somebody that can like just replicate all those great sounds as opposed to just talking in your ear and telling you that you're a good boy.
They always do. Whenever they do sounds, they always do like the most annoying sounds into the mic, and it's like that's not it.
Yeah, they like tapping take a cup and then they. Yeah, they'll take a cup and they'll like knock on the cup, and I'm like, when am I going to need this in my soundscape?
I will say that a lot of times those noises can release, like, especially if you're listening with headphones on, those noises can release like tingles in the back of your brain. And that's why that a lot of people do those. Those are the most common sounds that release those tingles for people. Whereas car driving on gravel isn't always tingle inducing. And so they're trying to get the most views.
Oh, no, I beg to differ.
I'm not sure.
I think driving on gravel would be like the greatest ASMR stream if you could just figure out a way to put a belt under a tire and then like have it attached with gravel and have that constant rotating sound. Oh, I think you'd get a billion views. No Guess way. What, guys? Figured out my
I'm
new stream.
I'm not saying you wouldn't get views. I'm just saying
she's explaining why those other sounds exist.
Yeah.
I think that it's probably just too difficult to recreate a sound like that in a stream setting, and that's why they just like bang on cans and stuff.
In a live stream setting for sure. I bet there's a way, you know, going down a gravel hill in neutral, like no engine sound whatsoever, you could loop that real easily after a certain
like
point.
Someone walking on fresh snow, it's got a nice crunch to it.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, does snow have a sound? Because that's my favorite sound. I know it's an
that's
insulated
the lack of sound.
Yeah. It like insulates sound and gets it away, but you know what I mean. When it like snows and it's nighttime and there's no cars and there's no darn barn owls or crickets or howling wind in the background, it's just the snow.
I've never experienced it. I've heard it on YouTube videos where it's like ice cracking on like a big open lake.
Oh,
like those fun.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty cool.
I love those. I love them.
So the fun fact that I learned this week, I work for a warranty company and we have both Canada and US people that contact us. And we have a lot of Canada people that contact us for airline damage quotes, which is very strange. So like the airline will damage their property and they need a quote to send to the airline of how much it costs so that they can be compensated. And I was really curious because it's mostly Canada cases that we get that are these airline quote cases. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. Like we every once in a while get them from the US, but not as frequently as from Canada. So I looked up how many airports there are in Canada. There are 518 airports in Canada. That's a lot. That's a lot of airports. But then I looked up how many airports there are in America. There's 5,211 airports in America. Mm-hmm. And there's 14,850 private airports in America. So that kind of makes sense why airport damage is just not a thing, because America's got a lot going on. Anyways, that number kind of blew my mind and I wanted to share it with you. That was all.
Fascinating.
I could be wrong, but I think a lot of Canada's airports are probably having damage. This is pure wild speculation, which is this is the best way to do anything. To state a statement of fact is pure speculation. But, you know, most of Canada's population lives within like 50 miles of the border or something. It's like 90% of Canada's population. Mm-hmm. But obviously there's a lot more land up north. And so in order to get to a lot of that land, you have to drive on like one road, or you can just fly from like small airport. So I'm wondering if like smaller planes are worse at, you know, damage of luggage compared to bigger mm-hmm. planes for some reason.
It's usually not on the plane that the damage happens. It's usually on the loading and unloading of the plane mm-hmm. that the damage happens, because people just don't care and will drop it out of the plane.
Have you ever watched the videos that people take from the plane of the guys loading and unloading?
Like, they're just eating it.
Oh my gosh. And I've seen so
especially
many of them.
Wheelchairs like, and stuff.
I was just about to say the wheelchair ones. Oh my gosh. They just think it's so funny to wheel that stuff right off the edge of things.
And they're like, we don't know how it got broken. It's like, well,
really?
There's
here's this video that shows how it got broken.
Yeah.
Go be fired.
So this week, there was something really important that I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Okay.
And what was that thing?
I don't know. You tell us, Mike.
I don't know. I can't remember. I didn't have anything actually planned for it, but I'll say I have and I think all of us do, we have an addiction to video games. But right now,
I don't want to talk about it.
I've been playing a lot of Farm RPG on my phone, and it is quite literally just a number go up simulator, and you plant crops and harvest them, and then use that money to buy more seeds, and then go fishing and use that to do quests and stuff. It's just a visual point and click. There's like no moving around or anything. It's so strange. But my brain gets those tingles every single time. I'm like, oh, yeah, now I got enough to finish this quest. And I finish it. I'm like, yeah, that's great. And I see the next quest is like harvest 800 corn. And you're like, dude, that's going to take me 2 days. That's so stupid. I want reward now. And I think it's actually affected my ability to do schoolwork, because schoolwork is so hard to like get all this stuff together. And all of a sudden I have to like do that. Or I could just go and, you know, explore the woods and get some twine or some straw and make some twine. And it's a very, very fun game for nothing. And it's basically just the reward of accomplishing something as opposed to doing something real. You get that same sort of, you know, oh, yes, I finished writing my thesis, as opposed to, oh, yes, I just collected, you know, 400 apples so I can make some apple cider.
It's like instant gratification, essentially, that it's constantly mm-hmm. giving you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much the main reason I absolutely love video games, and it's completely detrimental to my productive life, is like anytime I want to be productive, usually these productive things take hours and hours and hours worth of just like trying to figure out what I want to do and then actually accomplishing it. And usually a lot of times it will lead to like some sort of failure, but like video games don't do that.
Yeah. Video games
it's
are
dangerous.
Yeah. And I think it definitely plays with your mind. That idea that you are doing something worthwhile with your life as opposed to just clicking on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I've been doing that. I've been doing that with a game I hate. I just keep playing it. And I keep hating it. No. That game I love. That game's great. It's a new game I bought. It's called Evil West. And it's written by the same people who did Shadow Warrior. So it's also developed by them. I don't really like their studio because I always write stuff in really, really cringy ways. And they write these Western-esque characters in like a modern day sense. Having sayings like, you know, when shit hits the fan and like other things where it doesn't feel very...
There were no fans in that time period. How dare you?
Well, I that was a bad example, but I'm trying to think of like... It's like... They're taking modern lingo and then putting it on an old Western feeling, even though it's not old Western at all. You're just slaying vampires. Yeah. But still, they could have like gone ahead, and I hate the game. I hate the story. I skip every cutscene, and I hate the gameplay. I hate the way it's paced, but I have to complete it. I have to get the achievements. You know why? Because my brain's broken.
Because I need that fix. I have to accomplish something with my life. Let me click button.
Oh, it's so great. Yeah, that's my life right now. I did, however, I'm halfway through The Fall of the House of Usher.
Hmm.
That is a really good series. I love my man, Mike Flanagan. Hmm. Great director, great screenplay writer. I totally forgot that it was based off of Edgar Allan Poe, and it definitely gives off those vibes.
Yeah, isn't it like an amalgamation of all of Edgar Allan Poe's stories?
I don't think all of them, but there are a lot of them in there, and you can tell... that some of them are like at least for me, haven't aged too well in a modern sense, but he's consistently trying to put it in like this modern picture. And I think for the most part, 90% of the time, he does it so well. It's so interesting the way he's laid out. He's actually laid it out kind of similarly to how The Haunting of Hill House is laid out, just different enough where you're still interested. Like it gives off Knives Out vibes. But in a much more serious tone.
Yes,
and the dialogue is it's so quick and good and choppy. Like every character gets to the point, and these characters are also extremely intelligent, but they say things that make you hate them, but hate them in like, oh, this person's so smart kind of way. Love the way the characters are written.
You know, I've watched the first three episodes of Haunting of Hill House because Tommy's been begging us to watch it for like ages. I'm on episode three. And one thing I really, really, really love that they do is that they are pretty much like Mike Flanagan's really good at doing the show people don't tell people when it comes to writing. He shows you something about the character without directly telling you, you know, saying, oh, if you had a character that was super strong and you had somebody else be like, that person was super strong, they lifted a car, instead of just like having the person lift the car, then you would realize, oh, that person's super strong. Mike Flanagan does that with very small character moments and lets you draw your own conclusions in it. And it's a really great way to write because as the audience, you get much more engaged watching something.
He also has these, I can't call it necessarily monologues, because it's usually in a dialogue exchange between two characters. It's just really long sections of dialogue per character. At least for me, there's the Andor monologue where Bill Skarsgård's character is like going on his monologue being like, oh,
What have I sacrificed?
Yeah, what have I sacrificed? Love that. That's one of my favorite monologues of all time. It's just so great. There's a lot of like long pieces of dialogue that are reminiscent of that, where a character doesn't just, for example, there's one that is in exchange of dialogue. It's one character talking about when life gives you lemons, and another character responds, make lemonade. And he looks at him, and then he goes on like a 3-minute long monologue about how, no, you're wrong about this. And it's not unnecessary because you get a glimpse into how kind of twisted and manipulative this particular character is because he went on that 3-minute monologue about how when life gives you lemons, you do this instead. It seems unnecessary when I'm saying it, but with the way Mike Flanagan writes it. Oh,
there's
gosh.
A purpose for it.
There's a complete purpose, and it's so good. Every character has that type of purpose in their monologues. It's awesome. Love the show. Highly recommend it so far.
So apparently lemons are not actually natural. They are a blend of citron and sour or bitter oranges, and they've been bred over many centuries. So when you say life gives you lemons, we created life.
Yeah, lemons would not exist without farming, basically.
Also, we tend to think of like, oh, it has to be like horrifically intensely sour, but in other parts of the world, lemons are sweet, like Italian.
That's the same with mangoes, is right?
Yeah, well, there's also many different types of mangoes that some are specifically bred to be sour, some are specifically bred to be a lot sweeter.
I actually have some sweet limes in my refrigerator right now that you can peel and eat like you would eat an orange or a grapefruit. And it messes with your brain because you're expecting to bite into something sour, but it's just this really sweet citrus and so tasty.
I like how we just had the entire title of the podcast, because it went from like creativity, talking about writing and how to build characters and stuff, to like, did you know about fruits? So there's the chaos part. No, it's fine.
No, that's not. This is
because you said life gives me lemons. I was here. Like, oh,
go
that ramble. Reminds
oh, no, go
me.
Off. I see you about to go off.
I can bring
no,
it back.
Don't bring it back.
Okay.
Well. So, Tommy, you've been begging and clawing and pleading with us to watch the show The Haunting of Hill House, right? For like, what, 2 years now? Maybe
yeah.
More? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a while.
I finally watched it, Tommy. I watched it. Once Mike, since Mike, I guess we independently decided to watch it.
Yeah, I didn't know she was going to watch it.
Mike, once you're done watching it, we can discuss it, because I definitely think there's content to discuss.
Exactly. This is a more of a divisive kind of watch. You can like it or not, but I definitely think there's something to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I like the way Mike Flanagan does things, and he does it in a way that feels unique and interesting.
It was distinct and unique. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So far, it's very well structured too. I just finished the third episode, so I don't know how the rest of them are going to go, but I could predict based upon the previous structure, and if it continues upon that path and then sort of culminates in a, you know, more unified vision, it'll be very interesting to see how these different stories overlap, even though you know what the end of the story, well, not the end of the story, but you know what I mean. Anyway, we'll talk about that in another episode.
Yeah.
Look forward to ignoring that one, guys. Just
Merry Christmas, Tommy. I watched your show.
Thank you.
But apparently you've given us a new assignment.
Checking the time. Yeah, well, I actually think, there are immensely more disturbing scenes in this than I've seen in any other Mike Flanagan thing. Man has dialed up my uncomfortableness.
I'm not a huge fan of jump scares, and I know this show has a little bit of them. I like tension building, but I like horror. I like, I guess, more cosmic horror. The idea of something beyond our understanding.
Existential.
Yeah. Something that you can't really visualize because it's so different. Super fun. You know what I will say to change it up just a little bit? There's a different type of horror I've been experiencing recently, and that's playing a game called Lethal Company, which I think does a really good job of horror in creating your own little tiny horror stories, because you could easily play that game by just staying on the ship and not having like any major experience. But then you have to like go force yourself to go get stuff. And sometimes you just force yourself to go get that one extra thing and you die because of it. Or in my case, you just fall into a pit a bunch of times. But I've had a lot of fun playing that. And I know that everybody but Missy has, so we'll try not to like hog the rest of the conversation with it, but I think it has really cool horror elements to it.
I did watch a little bit of other people playing it, and I didn't really get why everyone is losing their minds over this game right now. Like, I get it written down, like the bullet points, but like visually, I guess I don't like the art style. It reminds me of when those plasma TVs first came out. And it's just, if you look at it the wrong way, everything's gray and blobby. Ooh. And that just took me right out of it.
This is actually, I was watching some video essay recently, and it was talking about, I think it was H. Bomber Guy, and he was talking about VHS tapes and why they made horror movies so much more horrifying is because you couldn't see. Because it was so blurry and gross. But like when you watch a DVD, everything's nice and clean and crisp. And, you know, the higher the definition, the more you can see. And that blurriness let you never understand where an enemy was or anything. And I think that this game kind of does that. It has that VHS sort of styling so that you never really can know exactly where an enemy is. It's all very dark. And that adds to the atmosphere quite a bit. When you watched it, Missy, did you watch the Yogscast do it for Jingle Jam, or have you watched like just a four-person?
I watched the Yogscast do it, not for Jingle Jam, but just like to do it. And, you know, I like their style when they play games. So I typically, if I'm going to like a game, I like it usually because the way they've introduced it was interesting. Their dialogue back and forth with each other was kind of entertaining, but the game itself, I didn't find entertaining as a viewer.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's completely different when you're playing it, but I didn't understand the overwhelming obsession that the internet's having with this game right now.
I think it's partly due to, it's a game for friends. It's a game you play and you have a blast with people you know. In our case, family, I guess. But
have friends. So.
It's something you just go on. I think a reason why I like it is that because it's so, not underproduced, but it's not this big, huge production, AAA studio game. It's not about it's a game that it proves you don't need graphics or an insane story or whatever. You don't need all these crazy things to mark a good game. You just need something that's fun, that you can that helps people interact with each other, that makes it your own moments. You can have moments with the game itself, but it's a lot better when you have these moments with other people because it makes them more fun and you get to have these shared experiences you can talk about. I think another reason why it does seem a bit scarier is because of the graphics or that weird haze that it has, a VHS type thing, because it makes things a bit harder to see, but also it just adds its own uniqueness to it, which is, there's a very popular horror on the internet out there right now called analog horror, which kind of delves into that. It's its own rabbit hole that y'all can go down. It's a lot. It's big, like SCP and stuff like that.
Is that kind of like backroom style, like recorded with?
Yeah, backroom. Yeah.
I think you were saying this the other day that you've played with a lot of different groups now.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that change the dynamic of the game itself when you play with these different people?
It's just different play styles and different how people interact with each other, not just within playing, but also what they say. I have one group of friends that just crap on each other the whole time. They'll just, there's barely any positive dialogue going between people. It's just people just absolutely going in on each other, saying nothing good. But then I'll have other people where it's like really trying to be like the best they can be, like try to min-max it, try to do the best that they can. And I have another group, or I have people like you guys, where we're just trying to go in there, have fun, do whatever. And it definitely changes playstyle and whatever, but honestly, I like having different groups to play with because each time I play with a different group, I get something new from it. It's a different experience. If I was just playing with one group the whole time, I probably would have kissed the game goodbye because it's just the same experience. I know what I'm going to get in and out every time, while, you know, some people are just different, you know?
I think it's interesting because what helps make this game so great in the horror aspect, I think, is also what helped Alien Isolation. I think it's what video games give in general is control. It's the idea of control over a situation. And when you have a certain amount of control, you feel like you are in it. You have some sort of weight towards the situation. So Lethal Company gives you an immense amount of control, and it continuously tells you, here's how you deal with this enemy and this enemy and this enemy. So you feel like there is a way that you can get around it, and it's just not this unstoppable force. And I think that makes tensions higher, because when you screw up, it's on you and it's your fault. And now that's scarier than just something being like, oh, it's going to go in and kill you every single time. Like, there's always a way around it. So you, as a player, you want to try to make your way around it, which makes it scarier, I think. There's always like that level of control that video games can give you, regardless if you have it or not.
A great example of a really tense moment that we had control over. We are at the ship. There's three dogs and a giant outside. So very, very bad. Tommy dies with a bunch of loot. And Liam is there and he's like, I basically have to go out and get this loot or we lose. And nobody was talking because he couldn't, because he had to be super quiet. And Liam was super stealthing around trying to make sure that he could get this loot. And it was like the last minute that he possibly could have did it. Like, he ran out and jumped and grabbed it and got back in and pretty much saved the day in terms of loot. And it was like one of those very, very tense moments that I wasn't even playing, but I was part of it. And I went, okay, this is where it gives you the amount of control, and it gives you an impossible situation sometimes, but then you just figure out how to do it.
Wait, that was Liam?
Yeah, Liam was the one that ran out and jumped and got all that.
I thought I was viewing you the whole time, and I was like, wow, Mike's got some balls on him.
Nope, definitely not.
No, Mike was just watching.
Yeah. I was standing in the back like, I'm about to launch this ship. As soon as I see him get punched, it's gone.
Nice job. It was a good move. I was watching it while I was, you know, dead. So
this is why I love the game, because there's a certain amount of control, a certain amount of strategy that you have. I knew I was dead as soon as I stepped down. I was like, oh, there's dogs down here. So I tried to drop all of my loot and run away with the dogs so someone could bring up that loot. It immediately created a situation where it was like tense, high stakes. You can get around it, but can you? And I love that.
That's why I think it's also really well made, this game, is because of there's so many different unique AIs. All the monsters have their own unique
rules.
Yeah, rules and the way they act. And I can't remember which one, but I think there's a couple of them, or maybe one of them, that actually learns the more you play the game. Kind of like the alien in Isolation. But yeah, it's really well done and really well made, how almost every single monster you can counteract and kind of get around, but also how many different monsters there are that are so unique, and that it's so well, it's all about how you play the game. You playing the game is what affects the outcome of you dying or not, instead of it's just the monster coming to get you.
I like the fact that, like, oftentimes you'll buy flashlights and then choose not to bring them in because you don't want to lose the flashlight. So it's like you just bought it for no apparent reason and you're just going to go into a dark space. And you're making that, like, conscious choice to go, I am going to get scared now.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of thrilling when you turn the corner and you see a giant enemy and you're like, oh my God, run, 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 go, go, go. And you pop out the door as somebody's going in. You're like, well, they're dead. So
yeah.
Horror has the most potential in video games because of that level of just like interactivity that you have. And I can't wait to see where it goes.
Have you, you ever been affected by a book or audiobook or like Audible, not the website, but like something you hear for horror? Has horror ever affected anybody in a medium other than, you know, TV, movies, video games, anything like that?
For me, it's usually still pictures or art. I have a lot of trouble mentally visualizing things in motion. So like if I close my eyes, I can't picture any of your faces, but I can picture a still image of you guys. So all of my visual references are photographs of you guys. So for me, you know, I remember the feeling or kind of the environment of horror settings, but pictures, like still frame pictures, make me feel very like stressed, because that I can easily recall in my head. So horror art, I guess.
I would say, yeah, I mean, ghost stories exist for a reason. And being up at like, I mean, it's been a while, but being up at like a sleepover or whatever, and just like telling really scary stories can like really mess you up. When someone's a good storyteller, they can build that anticipation. They can build that like creepiness. And it's really fun hearing. I don't like watching horror unless it's a video game, but I don't mind hearing about these creepy stories because they always give you the little goosebumps and you're like, I would say less so reading it, but more so hearing someone talk about it is my other like go-to horror thing.
I don't know. I've always been the biggest hater of horror. I usually find most horror really stupid, really, really bad. Most of it isn't scary. And it's usually, there's no story behind most of it. I don't like it when it's focused on the scare. I like it when it's focused on a story with added element of scare to it. But I don't know, it's really independent. I like very few games have really scared me. And same with movies, like it's very rare. I guess it's random. It could be anything, but it doesn't happen often. Usually if it's trying to scare me, it's not going to work. It's usually what's not trying to scare me, but randomly is like, oh, whoa, that'll work.
I think with horror too, it's definitely about the energy of the group that you're with. So playing a game like this, we're all together, maybe experiencing it. If you watch a scary movie by yourself, that might be kind of crazy, but imagine if you had like a whole group of people who are all very tense. That energy that everybody gives off is also probably going to make you tense. The best example I can give is if you go to a haunted house, you know, you're all walking through it together on purpose, and obviously something's going to jump out and scare you because that's entirely what like haunted houses are designed around. But it's, if you walk through it by yourself, there might be a very lonely style horror, but I think you get more pumped up when you're with a group of people going like, I know this isn't scary. I know that they're never going to touch me, but I don't know when it's going to come. The weasel's going to pop eventually.
I'm that horrible friend that just laughs the entire time. I'm like, they usually throw me at the back because they're like, no, we're not dealing with you.
I went to a haunted house once and I wasn't scared. I was also laughing. Yeah. The only thing that really freaked me out is someone whispered, but in my ear, like from behind me. And I don't remember what it was, but I was like, nope, don't like that. Let's leave. And that was the only thing, with the being chased by a chainsaw, the creepy horror, body horror, none of it freaked me out. But being whispered in my ear by someone I didn't know, I was like, nope.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Going to haunted houses is my favorite way to experience quote unquote horror. I know it's cheap jump scares, but I love growing with a group of people, especially if there's one person that's just terrified, because like Tommy, I'm usually laughing like crazy and then they'll get me at some point because I'm like not paying attention and I'll jump. It's great.
The one time I can recall is I was just laughing so hard and like one jump scare came out and then another one immediately came out and I'm like, ha, you thought you were gonna get me with that one, and the third immediately came out right after that and that's the one that got me. I was like, oh. I just like wasn't expecting it, but I loved it. It was so much fun.
When I was living in Baltimore, we did like an hour and a half trek up to somewhere in Pennsylvania, maybe 2 hours. And it was in this like old abandoned gigantic parking lot. And they set up 7 different walkthrough, like different themed horror house things that you would walk through. And each one was pretty elaborate. And it was just a group of us that went through. So 6 of them were kind of, you know, smaller. And the 7th one was gigantic. And that was like one of the most fun evenings I've had in my youth in general. It's just because it was like, let's just go and be super scared.
I love that. I love haunted things.
Well, audience, what are you afraid of now that it's 2024 and the clock to doomsday is ticking down ever so quicker and we are rapidly approaching the brink of which we will all fall off of the flat of the earth?
Huh?
Edge.
You're telling me it's flat now?
Yep, sorry.
Don't worry. The great ice barrier will prevent you from falling off.
Oh, no, there's, you thank can goodness. You can leave the ice barrier. There's the like another world beyond it.
What kind of, what is it named?
You ever seen the maps where it's like there's more ice barriers that keep on going out farther and farther? It's just like there's more like continents and like there's more oceans and it just keeps on going farther and farther and farther.
Yeah, I've never seen one of them.
It's pretty cool.
I believe it.
If the earth is flat, what's on the other side? Because it's like a coin, right? It'd just be a huge waste of space if there was nothing on the other side.
We got to capitalize on that space.
So you know how you have your gaming set up and then like behind your monitors and stuff, there's a bunch of cords and you just don't look at it? That's kind of what it's like on the other side of the earth. Oh, it's a bunch of cords and it's a little bit of a mess.
Like bones.
Nothing could be on the other side because it would just fall out into space.
I watched a couple movies the past week.
Oh, what'd you watch?
Oh, yeah.
One of those being Gangster Squad. Now, with a movie with that name, you know it's going to be something else. It stars Josh Brolin
and
Ryan Gosling.
Okay. Okay, good, good, yeah.
There it is. What is it called? Oh, Gangster Squad.
Gangster Squad. Right. It's got a lot of actors in it.
Here's the challenge. You have 3 sentences to summarize the plot of Gangster Squad.
I wasn't even going to summarize the plot.
Oh, then
because it's just your average like Italian gangster kind of movie, but instead of Chicago, it's Los Angeles. And like, it's so basic. It's so plain. The writing is plain. The dialogue is goofy. There's nothing interesting or different about it, except you got some actors that you might like. Oh, yes. Also got Emma Stone, which is not the last movie I'm going to see with the two of them.
That's crazy because this is this has a stacked cast. Ryan Gosling,
this cast is insane.
Josh Brolin, Emma Stone, Nick Nolte, Giovanni Ribisi, Anthony Mackie. Oh man, I like all them.
But like, yeah, it's just kind of, it was a kind of a disappointment because it's a movie for a lot of a potential because of not only the cast, but it is that kind of old timey, like it was took place right after World War II. It was like in the 40s and all these people were vets and they're like, I don't know, like fucking doing vet stuff. It's a movie that could have been a lot more, but they use the most basic, like average mafia type thing, cops versus mafia stuff. And it's just, it was a big disappointment because it was higher production out of most of the movies I've been seeing. And it was just, it looked like it could be more. And so it got very boring through it. Some people like it just because they're really into that mafia stuff. I like the vibe of it, the era, but it just wasn't all that. There's nothing special about it. The other movie I watched was Fight Club.
Oh,
yeah. Well, you can't
that
talk
was
about
a
it though.
Movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, guys, that's the end of the podcast.
Fight Club is a movie.
It's a movie
that so many people latch onto as like biblical truth when they completely fail to realize the intended message or messages of the movie. And I've never read the book.
There's a book?
Yeah, it's based upon a book.
Of course is a book.
I like the movie. It was fun, but do I think it's like one of the greatest movies of all time that also should inform how you act in your life? Absolutely not. No.
Oh.
I think it was just really unique. Never seen a movie quite like it, which I think I like unique movies, but I don't like a movie that is being unique for the sake of being unique, which I don't think Fight Club was. It was just unique in what it was trying to do, and that's why I liked it so much.
Yeah, I agree. It's a very unique movie and unique story style. I think that's also a David Fincher.
It is.
Bring him up time and time again. Great director.
Yeah, super different. I would 100% recommend. It is a movie. I would not recommend Gangster Squad.
So that is a thumbs down for Gangster Squad.
What's the ratings? Two ratings.
Ratings for Gangster Squad is 4.8 to 5.3.
Okay. Spread of five.
Ratings for Fight Club is like a... That's hard, man. That is hard. How high do I want to go? It's like an 8.2 to an 8.9, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Cool. Well, that's pretty awesome. Guys, this has been a podcast. How did you feel about the podcast? Did we podcast enough?
I felt not too bad.
For being completely unprepared and abandoned by our host, this is great.
It's pretty good.
I have a tummy ache. My tum-tum doesn't feel good.
If y'all enjoyed what you heard, you can please reach out on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTubes and all the stuff that we probably don't have. 1L2N Productions. That's right. 1L2N Productions. If you like what you heard, Patreon is a great way to support us. You can head on over there and donate to the cause of chaos. We'd also like to say that if you enjoyed what you listened to, please give us a rating and a review. And if your review is good, then I'll read it online. In fact, we got our first review, guys. Let me read it right now. I really love the podcast. Mike, super funny. Mike is really a great addition to this podcast. More Mike, please. 5 stars. Great review. Love it. And that was by Totally a Real Person on the podcast network. So anyway, if you want to go ahead and leave us a review, I'll go ahead and read it and give you a special shout out. Thank you. And then share it with other people. And I believe that's it. So for the last word of the day, we'll go to
Tommy. Take it away.
What do you think is a fruit that shows the most affection? Like, is it a banana? Is it a banana? Is it a banana?